Thank you, you're beautiful. Hello and welcome to 2008's first Twitutin. Yes, it's a brand new year and the year 2007, so recently the present has itself become a part of history. Weird. Some experts predict that 2008 will one day be history too, but to me that just seems implausible. 2008 is so new and fresh, I'm sure it'll go on forever. Mind you, I said that about 2007 and 2006 and 1987. But no other years. But probability suggests I have to get it right sometime. Though admittedly, I did learn everything I know about probability from Noel Edmonds. And standing at the threshold where the old year becomes the new, we see the mythological creature, Samantha Janus. Looking back at the year just gone and thinking, it was good I got that EastEnders job, things have been a bit quiet. Looking forward at the year ahead and thinking, I hope I keep that EastEnders job, things have been a bit quiet. I'm sure I'm not the only one who can see the advantages of a two-headed Samantha Janus with one face pointing forwards and the other pointing backwards. She'd be excellent at parallel parking. And even though it's a new year, opponents of change will be delighted to know there'll be nothing new about Twitutin. It's the same old ragbag of jokes about what happened this week in history, punctuated by our fabulous house band, Christian Riley and Diplodocus.
Now with added 2007.
Hey, did you have a good Christmas, Christ?
Oh, yeah, it was terrific. I mean, having a little baby, like I do, made it truly magical.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, nice one.
I think once you have children, it makes the whole Christmas thing so much more meaningful.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Although Charlie is a bit young to understand exactly what's going on, I could see in his eyes that he was still enjoying everything.
That's good. No, that's it.
Still enjoying the music and the excitement.
Mm. Oh, yes, my lord. Do it that way.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, what's going on?
I would have thought that was obvious, Christ. I am having sex with a serving wench.
Well, can you stop it? It's a bit distracting.
Oh, don't you see what I'm doing? History is boring. No one's interested in it. But I've been watching The Tudors on DVD. And all they do to spice up the dull old history bits is put in a sex scene every 8 minutes and everyone stays tuned in through the turgid plot because they know they might get to see a man's bum in a bit. Or a lady's breasts, for me, I mean. I like the breasts, not the bums. I mean, I like the women's bums, though not the men's bums, even though really they're just the same things, aren't they, really?
Not really.
A bit hairier, but, don't mind that. Quite a good thing, I think, sometimes. But anyway, plus, by doing this, I get to have sex with a reasonably attractive whore, all at the licence payer's expense. The result... Call me Lord again, sweetheart. That was pretty good, eh?
Anything you say, my lord.
Oh, yes.
I've just got a note from the producer saying that we've just lost 50% of our audience in the last 2 minutes.
That's 9 people.
They can only hear what's going on. Thank God they can't see you with all your bits hanging out. You're no Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
No, I'm not. He looks like a girl. I should be playing Henry VIII.
Yeah, maybe the old Henry VIII when he was fat and had gout and had been dead for 4 years.
All done, but don't worry. Don't worry, sex fans. There'll be more of the same in about 8 minutes.
That was then, this is now. Spending the license fee of Mrs. Ava Hartnell from Dorset on procuring prostitutes for Richard Herring.
Thanks, Ava.
Right, back to boring old history. Unbelievably, it's a year since Saddam Hussein was hanged. I'm sure we all remember how respectfully he was treated in his last minutes, which made him look not so much like a deposed head of state as a bamboozled victim of a gang of happy-slapping girls. They even recorded it on a mobile phone. It was perfect. Personally, I think killing him was a bit extreme. He did some bad things, admittedly, but ultimately he was just a bit of a scoundrel. He was a lovable rogue, like a funny but slightly suspect uncle. After a couple of years in jail, he would have made an excellent contestant on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Either that or we show some consistency and have Neil and Christine Hamilton strung up as well. I think it's got to be fair. Saddam was executed on the 30th of December 2006. Seems a shame to me they didn't just wait a day and kill two birds with one stone.
By the power vested in me by the Iraqi state, I carry out the death sentence imposed on you, Saddam Hussein, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year!
Oh, the pull of the rope set up the record player.
Oh, we should do this every year.
And whilst we're at it, why don't the Americans celebrate the New Year by replacing that stupid falling ball in Times Square with George W. Bush being catapulted into a gigantic spike? Yeah, satire. The war in Iraq was not in my name. I can't believe that people don't realise it was just all about oil, though I do really need oil to run my car and to fuel the planes that take me on holiday and bring luxury goods to me from around the world. And I don't want to pay loads extra for that, nor to live in a world where I don't have those luxuries. So thinking about it, the war in Iraq was in my name. And really, if you think about it, in the name of nearly all those people who said it wasn't in their name as well. Though, come on, now it's time for it to end, to make friends with everyone in Iraq and try and get the price of a litre of petrol down under a pound. No one has suffered more from that war than me. I do a lot of driving, you know, to gigs and stuff. It's tough. So please welcome back our house band, Christian Riley and Diplodocus.
So on this week in the year 2000, a BA flight to Kenya was hijacked by a mentally disturbed gentleman who stormed the cockpit, grabbed the controls, caused the plane to nosedive 10,000 feet. The crew and some business class passengers managed to bundle him out, avoiding the plane crash by seconds. Amongst those business class passengers on board the flight was one Brian Ferry.
Women are screaming, crewmen start to cry. Cause we all think we're going to die. Oxygen masks are falling from the sky. You're a madman who thinks he can fly. All because you forgot to take your medication. What's your name? Get off the plane. Get out of the cockpit, you nasty man. And get that joystick out your hand. Somebody please wrestle him to the ground. And kick his face when he falls down. He's ruining my winter break. What you doing, you stupid Burke? We are crashing back down to Earth. Retake your seat, you mental case. Stewardess, please restrain him. Tie his hands behind his back in case he tries to get up again. You're not big, you're not clever. You are stupid and you smell. With yourself, this incident will damage our health. We will only counseling when we land. Bang goes all my holiday plans. You don't be stupid, go and Miss Crescent. What's your name? Get off the plane.
Christian Riley and Dick Madogas. Brilliant. Well, it probably was. I wasn't listening. I was being teabagged by the King of France's sister. On the 1st of January 1946, Emperor Hirohito of Japan announced that he wasn't a god. This must have been an embarrassing moment for someone who, remember, up to that point, for the first 45 years of his life, had claimed to be divine.
Pray silence for His Majesty the Emperor and living God Hirohito.
Oh, Hirohito, our God.
We prostrate ourselves before
yeah,
you.
Yeah, hello. Actually, a bit embarrassing. Something I have to admit here. Oh, probably should have mentioned it before. Thing is, you know I said I was a god and that? I'm not. I'm not actually a god. I'm just a man, sorry. Stop prostrating now, if you like, sorry.
But you must be a god. We've been worshipping you as a god for nearly half a century.
Yeah, said I was lying. Oops. There's no hard feelings.
Don't listen to him. He's testing our faith. Of course he's a god. He has to be.
If he isn't, we'd all look like idiots for treating him as one for so long. Mm. So he must be a god.
Yeah, look at him. He looks just like you would imagine that God would look.
Yeah.
A sort of short, skinny, middle-aged Japanese man. Wearing a suit and glasses.
I know. I look very godly. But surely the glasses were a giveaway. If I was a god, then wouldn't I just magic it so that I could see without spectacles? Or at least magic some contact lenses so I looked, you know, a bit less dorky.
maybe it's your glasses that hold the magic for your super godly powers.
Are you an idiot? What godly powers? I've done so little that might be seen as godly that I... Honestly, I can't quite believe any of you fell for it. Name one even remotely godly thing I've done in the last 45 years.
You defeated Godzilla in hand-to-hand combat.
And Mothra.
And Godzuki.
No.
I made up those stories, didn't I? None of those monsters are actually real, either, are they?
Now we know you're lying.
Godzuki's real. I've seen him. He's real.
He's testing our faith. We still believe in you, O Lord our God.
If I was a god, don't you think that I might have used my divine powers to prevent us from losing World War II and being blown up with two nuclear bombs?
You just took your eye off the ball. You can't be everywhere at once.
And at least you beat Godzilla. How many cities has he destroyed since you've been in charge? None.
He's not real! Oh, don't you get it? I pretended to be a god so that you would all do what I wanted and give me your money and be loyal to me. But I'm not a god. I'm not even a very nice man. I've been lying to you.
Nah, we know you're just saying that because the Americans told you to. We know the truth, Lord. We're going to carry on worshipping you.
Yeah, it's the only way to ensure we don't get eaten by a godzuki.
No.
There's one for all the Christians who write in to complain that we never have a go at other religions. We certainly laid into those people who believe Japanese emperors are divine. And how many of you Christians who say that all religions should be respected actually believe we should respect that religion? Be honest, come on, it's stupid, isn't it? Just like what you think. I'm joking. I've got a nice view of world religions. I actually believe that all religions have got it right when they say that all the other religions are wrong. It's so close, just one more to discount.
That was then, this is now. Smashing all world religions apart from Islam, which we enormously respect. We may be blasphemous, but we're not stupid.
Sorry if the history's been a bit insipid there, but don't worry, I am tupping a comely milking wench. On the 1st of January 1985, the first mobile phone call in the UK was made between Vodafone and comedian Ernie Wise. I've been quite confused about what was going on. We have this preconception that early mobile phones were unwieldy and large, but it might just be because they chose the smallest man in Britain to be the first one to hold one. It's all about perspective. Now it's time for the return of a part of the show that I thought we'd seen the back of. It's TV's Emma Kennedy's Births, Deaths and Marriages.
It's time to find out who got wed, bred and dead with TV's Emma Kennedy.
Hello, Rich. It's great to be back with the Births, Deaths and Marriages slot with me, TV's Emma Kennedy. Let's find out who went through death's door, who got a mother-in-law and whose mother's clacker was sore this week. And it was a very happy 46th birthday to Unidexter, not crazy, ex-model Heather Mills McCartney, who recently advocated the drinking of rat and cat milk to save the world. I wonder how long before she suggests milking beetles dry. But in the never-ending bonfire night of time, our lives are but a tiny banger, a banger that often fails to even go off, but to which, nevertheless, we can never return. So let us speak of those who departed this mortal coil this week. We say fare thee well, sir, to the man with the second funniest name in history after Felix Wankel, Jacob Fugger, who died this week in 1524. Unbelievably, Jacob Fugger was a merchant banker. Anything more about him than that, but what a fugger he must have been, and what a merchant banker. But let's not waste the tears upon the dead. Let us sprinkle our salty liquids over the living instead and celebrate love. For this week in 1947, Roy Rogers married his co-star from over 100 movies and TV shows. No, not Trigger the Horse. That would have been wrong. But actress Dale Evans, who actually was a human being. Phew! Imagine if things had gone differently. Still, he wouldn't be the only man to marry his horse. Just ask Prince Charles. Oh, cheeky! Steady on!
Hold on, Emma. Hold on. Don't laugh at her.
Yes,
thank
what?
You.
What is it?
Why should I ask Prince Charles about that?
Because he would know about marrying a horse.
Don't just say the same thing again. Don't encourage her. Are you saying Lady Diana was a horse?
No, she
she was a candle in the wind.
Good. But,
you know, maybe someone else he married, someone else.
He was only married one other person, and that person was a person, not a horse.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, some people might say...
Some people might say what? That a perfectly attractive woman resembles a beast of the fields? I won't have sexist slander on my show. I have nothing but respect for all women, and I won't have this kind of lazy, offensive, hackneyed rubbish on my show. Especially from someone who has a face that looks like a pig's backside after it's been repeatedly run over with a bulldozer.
Yeah,
broken bits of glass.
Yeah, well, bad luck, Billy O, because you're married to it, so the joke's on you.
Well, there are ways of getting out of that. Get out of here, Morco.
I'm not Morkish.
You are. You're Camilla Morkable.
Oh, fucker you.
Ladies and gentlemen, TV's Emma Kennedy. Now it's time to welcome back everyone's favourite conspiracy theorist and internerd, Brian O'Green.
Hello, Richard. Save the cheerleader. Save the world.
Yeah. All right, I'll give it a go. So, what have you got for us this week, Brian?
Well, Rich, I shall be using my time on the show this week for a new section called What If That Thing That Happened in History Hadn't Happened in History and Something Else Had Happened Instead?
What if that thing that happened in history hadn't happened in history and something else had happened instead?
Catchy.
thanks. One of the guys in my Doctor Who web ring came up with it.
Yeah, remind me to have a chat with you about the connotations of the term web ring. So I'm genuinely fascinated by this idea. Exploring what might have happened if things had turned out differently is always interesting. I often wonder what would have happened if they hadn't changed the name of Opal Fruits to Starburst. What strange parallel universe would we all be living in then?
Nerd.
So I'll allow you to continue with this clumsily named section, as long as you don't ask what would happen if the Nazis hadn't been defeated and had successfully invaded England.
Oh.
Brian...
I just like the uniforms. All right, I'll do another bit of history. This week, in 1962, the Beatles auditioned for Decca Records, who turned them down, preferring to sign Brian Poole and the Tremolos instead. The idiots.
Yeah, Dick Rowe at Decca famously declared, "Guitar groups are on their way out, Mr. Epstein." Stupid Dick Rowe.
The Beatles were signed by EMI, but it made me wonder, what would life be like now if the Fab Four had been turned down by all record companies?
A world with no Beatles. Imagine, no imagine.
Well, let's imagine our parallel universe without the Beatles. There would be plenty of positives. No Ringo Starr. No Frog Chorus. No Oasis. Liverpudlians would be less cocky. Heather Mills would be less wealthy.
Very different result. This is all very compelling, Brian. Maybe the world really would be a better place if the Beatles hadn't existed.
Ah, but there are also some negatives. Just think, if the Beatles hadn't existed, who would have filled the vacuum?
Let me guess, the Nazis?
No. Nice idea, but no.
The Sontarans from Doctor Who?
Far worse than that, Richard. The only other band at that time to successfully carry off mop-top haircuts. The Monkees. Just think, the Monkees would have gone on to be as big as the Beatles, though, of course, nobody would have known what that term meant. In this nightmare scenario, it would have been not John Lennon assassinated, but rather Mickey Dolenz, meaning that we would now have his horrific, gurning shoe face on posters propped up naked in bed next to Yoko Ono.
Plus, the 1980s TV show Metal Mickey might have used slightly different camera angles, as some of the episodes were directed by Mickey Dolenz.
Ah, you grasp the gravity of the situation. Worst of all, though, Richard, had the Monkees been more successful, Tippex would never have existed.
Why?
Because it was Mike Naismith, off of the Monkees, mum, who created that wonder potion. And had the Monkees earned more money, Mike would have bought his mum a bungalow, thus meaning she resigned her job and never came up with liquid paper. Can you imagine a world without Tippex, Richard?
Yeah, it's pretty much the world we live in now, isn't it?
But the 80s and 90s would have been vastly different. Swathes of minor typographical errors would have remained uncorrected. Goths would have had nothing to write on their bags with. Lindsay Dobson at my school would never have become addicted to sniffing Tippex thinners and would have passed the one extra GCSE she needed to get into the sixth form, ensuring her a university place, thus meaning she wouldn't have been working in Alaska Fried Chicken in Guildford last Christmas when I went back to see my parents and drunkenly attempted to look down her top, leading to the manager barring me for life from my favourite restaurant. Even when I told him it wasn't my fault and it was all down to EMI not rejecting the Beatles in 1962. An explanation which, if anything, seemed to make it worse. That, Richard, is what the world would be like if the Beatles had never existed.
You've really thought this through.
I live alone.
Brian O'Green, thanks very much.
George!
This week saw the death of old Davy Crockett at the Alamo. We don't really know much about this rough and tough frontiersman, except for one thing. He wore a ridiculous hat. That's it. That's the sum achievement of a man's life. A bit pathetic, if you ask me. I've got a proper job doing this. But he only had himself to blame.
I don't think we can hold these Mexicans much longer, Colonel. We need reinforcements.
Wait, who's that? Riding towards the Alamo with something mighty strange upon his head.
It's me! Davy Crockett! I'm here to save a day!
But where are your men? Surely you haven't come on your own.
I haven't come my own. There's me, Davy Crockett. And this my Davy Crockett hat.
Right, we're facing a force of 7,000 Mexican troops, and all you've brought is a stupid-looking hat.
But it's my Davy Crockett hat. All will bow down for it. Look at here. Yooty hoodle hoo, Mickey Hoos. Lay down your weapons, or I will unleash the fury of my Davy Crockett hat.
We don't fear you or your stupid hat.
Your hat, she is rubbish.
I don't know. I quite like it.
Is it brilliant? It's coonskin.
Oh, now, even though I'm a Texan, I do find that very offensive.
No. Raccoon.
Oh, right.
It's made out of raccoon fur. Oh, I'm not racist.
Apart from
hating Mexicans, see here, that's the raccoon's body fur, and then its tail.
So that there, just under the tail, is the raccoon. Lord above, you think that wearing a vermin's a-hole on your head is going to make our enemy respect you?
It might.
We need more men and guns and some sort of brilliant military strategy, possibly some kind of flying wizard who can shoot thunderbolts out of his fingers. Not a hairy, flappy, hide-based accessory with an animal anus on it.
Davy
Crockett! Just saying Davy Crockett, it ain't gonna help.
But if we all put on coonskin hats, then we'll be fine. I have a theory that wearing raccoon skin makes you impenetrable to all bullets.
And how did you kill the raccoon you're wearing on your head?
With my gun.
Hello there. We will kill you, but we give you one chance. Give up, and we will let you all go free.
Oh, thank God.
Go to hell, Mexico. My Davy Crockett hat can take you all. Your sombreros are useless. How many a-holes do they have on them? None.
What are you doing? Are you mad?
He didn't mean it. We're perfectly happy to give in.
Too late. He has insulted our bumless sombreros.
Ah.
Destroy the Alamo.
Oh, we're all going to die.
No, we'll get out of here, and one day we'll all look back on this and laugh. We'll look over at each other and say, remember the Alamo, and we'd be like, oh, no. Ooh, right up my raccoon hole.
On the 31st of December 2006, the UK finally paid off the final instalment of our Second World War debt to the United States of America, only 61 years after the end of the war. Now, that's what I call a long loan. Eat your heart out, students. You're rubbish. I wonder what it was like when we handed over the final wad of cash.
So, here we go, the final instalment, at last. What a relief.
Thanks, Guy. Just stick it on the table.
Sorry about all the coppers. You know what Gordon's like. Wow. I believe we finally paid this off.
So, can we interest you in any further loans?
Oh, no, I don't think so, thanks.
What about your wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? They must be costing megabucks.
Oh, they're just little wars, really, and actually, we've managed to save quite a lot of money on those by not giving our troops working guns or bulletproof vests. And also by having you Americans kill lots of them.
Nice one. But have you thought about consolidating all your existing wars into one big world war?
Another world war?
Well, you know what they say. Why have two when you can have three?
No, really, I think we'll be okay. The last one was fun and everything. What with the Blitz spirit and Dame Vera Lynn and Dad's army. But I'm not sure we'd want another. It would mean quite a lot of people dying.
We'd offer you a very competitive interest rate. And if you take out our special Middle East package, you wouldn't actually have to pay it back, as the entire globe will have been decimated in a nuclear holocaust, rendering all financial institutions meaningless.
Tempting.
We'll throw in a free iPod.
Nano?
Shuffle.
All right, it's a deal.
Okay, just sign there. Your house may be at risk if you do not keep up repayments. Everyone's house may be at risk in the event of a war. Body counts may go up as well as down. You cannot and will not ever be able to pay this loan back. We will own your country and cover it in McDonald's, Starbucks, and military bases. You are our gimp, and we will truss you up and make you squeal like a piggy.
Sorry, what was that?
Just a little bit of small print. Okay, it's been a pleasure doing business with you. Sucker.
That's pretty much the end of the show. All that remains for me is to give one of my wife's ladies-in-waiting a golden shower, and we can wrap this thing up.
I'm ready for you, sire.
Okay, here goes. Here comes the golden shower.
Oh, watch out, that hurts.
You love that gold.
Oh, that hit me in the eye. Still, it could have been worse. Yeah. What on earth is going on here?
TV's Emma Kennedy.
Yes! Stop showering that woman with gold, my own lady-in-waiting to. How dare you? Need I remind you that I am legally your wife, and if you're going to shower anyone with the gold that the BBC pay you, it's going to be me.
I will shower my gold onto anyone I like. Need I remind you, my hero is King Henry VIII, and you know what he did when his shrewish wife, Catherine of Aragon, complained about him carrying on with servant girls? He chopped off her stupid head.
No, he divorced her.
Henry VIII cut off the heads of all his 12 wives, Emma. You must remember the rhyme. Beheaded, beheaded, beheaded. Beheaded, beheaded, beheaded. Beheaded, 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 beheaded. Beheaded, maybe. I have a 2-1 in history from Oxford University, so I should know. And I've had enough of you. I'm going to chop off your mawkish head so I can marry this lady-in-waiting who has oddly gone a bit quiet since you arrived.
Yes, do it that way.
There she is.
But that is murder. You can't get away with it.
I am a celebrity, Emma Kennedy.
Well...
No, I am. I am.
Really?
I was on the celebrity boat race, the other boat. I was a celebrity.
You didn't really feature.
I was in it, though. And that means I'm
to make up the numbers.
I'm a celebrity, and celebrities can shoot, stab, or behead anyone they like. No one can do anything about it, because they're celebrities. Bring in the executioner.
No, you can't do this.
Place her head on the block.
Oh, I knew I shouldn't have let him put in this block.
Do you have any last words, TV's Emma Kennedy?
You can cut off my head, Richard Keith, but you can't cut off my legacy. The work I have done will live on forever. The episode of my family.
Don't mention that again.
My work in Channel 5's Suburban Shootout. My voiceover for Series 1 of Celebrity Scissorhands.
But not Series 2.
No. People will enjoy those things for hundreds of years after my physical death.
Well.
Rich, I don't want a golden shower on your parade, but wouldn't it make more sense ratings-wise to postpone the beheading until the next show, thus creating some dramatic tension and encouraging our few listeners to tune in again?
Yes, all right. That would also give me some time to think of a way out of this. People love the murder of women. They'd be bound to listen. They do. They love it. They'd be bound to listen again. All right, OK. Look, can you come back next week, Emma?
Oh, I'd love to.
Great. So, do tune in next time for an episode that I will be calling To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm very funny. Bye!
That was Then, This Is Now. It was written and performed by Richard Herring, Dan Tetzel, Danny Robbins and me, TV's Emma Kennedy. The songs and music were all done by Christian Riley and Diplodocus, who were Damien Caldwell, Martin Kane and Chai Brown Turner. It was produced by Liz Anstey. It was a Celador production for BBC Radio 2. Oh, I've got one.